There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River.
And welcome to a new episode of Geeks at Large. I'm Taylor, and I'm joined by Casey this week.
No, you're not.
Yeah, no. This no, is Casey not. Saying, no, you're not.
No, I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to read my book, and you're gonna say things, and occasionally I'll pipe in.
And you, which I'll is see. Like the opposite of what normally happens.
Yeah, let's see you try to be the suave, intelligent, charming one.
Okay.
We all know my face brings new listeners in every day.
And apparently your antics bring about many, many strangers to talk to you.
Something about me makes strange people decide that they want to walk over to me and spill their heart for a little bit.
Man, good thing the Manson family isn't roaming around anymore.
Dude, I would totally like to befriend the Manson family.
Oh my god.
I'm only saying that because now that means Helter Skelter will be the opening music.
Casey, don't say... No, don't put these expectations in people's heads. Also, this can be used as audio evidence if you do happen to break Charles Manson out of prison.
I'm not going to break him out of prison, but I'm saying that...
But I may try to get married to him like that lady.
I'm also not going to... Look, he's not the first person I'd want to meet, but I'm going to bet a conversation with Charles Manson would be an interesting conversation.
I'm not going to rule it out. I'm just saying
it's the same way I would really like to go hunting with Adolf Hitler.
Well, one's dead, and the other's Adolf Hitler.
Hitler's dead, and Charles Manson's career is dead.
But, on that note, as some have probably noticed, we haven't posted an episode in quite some time, our last episode being the Mad Men discussion that I had with Neil, and there's some reason for that, just kind of having other projects in line and kind of working on stuff for the show, and personal projects, at least on my
end. And trying to end forming a plan to break Charles Manson out of prison.
Well, now we know that.
Surprise!
That's a surprise.
You see, yeah, I tried it out on that prison in my hometown, and it worked.
That's kind of relevant and might date the show.
If someone's listening to this in 2 years, remember the Great Denim World Prison Escape of 2015.
Yes.
Fun fact, listeners... I used to live 2 blocks from that prison.
I feel like 2 blocks just sounds really close to a prison.
Dude, it's right across the street from my sister's
house. I know, I'm just saying, it's like when you're like, I live 2 blocks away from a prison. It's like the way someone says, oh yeah, I live 2 blocks away from my favorite pizza place.
Dude, there's nothing to do in Dannemora, New York. There's... a pizza place that sometimes closes and gets reopened as a new pizza place only to get closed 6 months later.
And now it's a prison.
There's a gas station that sells ice cream. That is all that is in Dannemora.
Are you telling me that there's a gas station that's like every other gas station?
Well, it sells like I need scoops of ice cream. Have you ever been to a Stewart's?
No.
Oh, dude, you should go to Stewart's. If you're ever in New England.
I feel like we're talking about like a person named Stewart. Yeah, go to his place, man.
He has the best weed and heroin. It's so good, sometimes I smoke the heroin and inject the weed.
I love injecting that arse cream into my veins.
Oh, no, don't give away that ice cream is our code for heroin and birth control.
Anyway, so a big reason why we haven't had an episode in a few weeks is just because, like, people have been busy, and I guess, well, it was also kind of like, what do we want to talk about? Because we're not doing so much just talking about a movie or a show or whatever. We're trying to not just do that for every episode like we used to. So we kind of just thought, I was like, Kirstie, why don't we just do a fan question episode since we haven't done one, and that can generate some interesting discussion. And
I forgot about it because I got distracted by my own things.
Because Kirstie has a life, apparently. Whatever. But also, I should probably just say this now, is that a lot of this planning is because next weekend I am going to Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I'm kind of setting some stuff up. Hopefully I can get like 2 episodes out of going there at least. Ideally I'd like to get 3, but I'm willing to accept 2 at this point. Cause there's going to be some cool people there. Some former SCAD students that, are making it big in comics right now.
You know, North Carolina isn't that far from Savannah.
What are you implying?
You should visit me.
No. It costs money.
It won't cost that much. Just stay here, dude. I'll give you a mattress.
No, but then I'm going on vacation.
Then you have to interact with me.
Yeah, then I have to actually talk to Casey face to face.
And Lord knows that face does not encourage conversation.
But anyway, that's was kind of like the big announcement. So look forward to a little bit of Heroes Con action coming in next few weeks or so. So
Is Steven going to Comic Con?
What's that? Yeah, Steven's going to Comic Con. I mean, I'm not going to say like, Steven, you got to get coverage of Comic Con for us. But I mean, shit, if he wants to, you know, post articles and junk, I don't know. I mean, if he wants to record something, but I want him to have fun too. You know, I don't want him to be like, you're going, so you gotta have some coverage, but you know, like that's his gift. Like, you get to do that. Have fun. You know, you've earned this. So yeah, Steven, Geeks at College, Geeks at Large, member alum, whatever the hell we're calling ourselves now. Plans on going to Comic Con. Escapee.
Yeah.
Escape. But yeah, so Heroes Con, and I'm gonna try and get maybe an interview or two, kind of like what we did with Tom Rogers a few months ago. So if you haven't listened to that episode, you go listen to it. It's Geeks at Large, episode 1.
The
Phantom Menace. Yeah. So, but that's for the upcoming episodes. But right now, we have some fan questions to get to you. So,
whoa, bro!
Oh no, bro!
I just channeled Shayla there for a moment.
Well, no, it was more like Muscle Man. Oh yeah, that was kind of Shayla the whoa, whoa. But we got, and I kind of described like we kind of have like these two kind of lighter, more fun questions. To start with, and then 2 a little more serious, more discussion generating.
And thing is, I don't know what these questions are at all. So when you keep saying that 2 of them are serious, I'm expecting one of them to just be. And from our good fan Roger Waters, where do you stand on Israel and Palestine?
Like. What are your thoughts on nuclear weapons in Iran? What do you, like, something really, like something worthy of the Nightly Show or something?
For our last question, don't you know that thousands of people are dying every day in North Africa? Why aren't you doing anything to stop it, personally?
Fuck you.
from B.H. Obama. That's a
from P.O.T.S.A.
P-O-T-U-S.
What?
It's P-O-T-U-S.
We're
talking POTUS, right?
Yeah, POTUS. That's what it is. What did I say?
PTSA. I think you're a fan of the Transportation Security Administration.
Yeah, that's what it is. Oh, wait, we were talking about Obama? I thought we were talking about that one.
I think that's the most political we've ever gotten.
No, it wasn't, but we won't bring up that last time. Anyway, all right, should we get
the incident?
No, all those lives lost. Not since that family reunion.
Why did we have to talk about Monica Lewinsky at the family reunion? When I close my eyes, I can still see the fires of hell burning.
No, the cigars! The cigars! 90s kids references.
Right, only 90 kids remember the Space Shuttle Challenger.
Oh my god! Fucking A! That's so awful, but it's like, I could totally see fucking BuzzFeed doing that shit.
Because they did.
Did they?
3 years ago.
Oh my god.
There's a thing they shared, like, only 90s kids remember this. That was one of them.
Oh my god, are you fucking serious?
I'm serious. I showed
remember
this to
the you. 90s, Green Day, grunge, you know, Rugrats. Challenger disaster.
Like, that's the thing that got me. That wasn't even the 90s, that was the 80s.
Yeah, it wasn't. I was born after. And then you had the Columbia one, but that was in the 2000s. So literally, in the 90s, there was no space shuttle disaster.
That we know of.
That we know of, but... just saying.
I might have turned this to a weird conversation.
You did, as always. It's weird. It's you talking about a weird conversation, and thus it's not weird at all.
To be fair, that is most things that I do.
That's what I'm saying. It's yeah, like ordinary for you to make things weird.
No, it's like the day I was walking through the park, and two homeless guys were telling me that I need to become a private investigator because that's where the real money is. I was just like, you know, for me, this one's pretty normal.
They just like recreate Chinatown. Okay, should we go ahead and start this?
Unless you want me to talk about my porn job.
No! Okay, first question from Kelly Ferguson.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Okay. Share a name with my mom, Kelly.
Her question is, how do you properly annihilate a devilish fiend, a.k.a. cockroach from your presence, without having to get too close? I've tried spray. They like to fly for my face. Casey, you live... You have an apartment. How do you deal with cockroaches?
This is the third time someone's asked me that this month. I'm not even kidding. Now, the way I deal with cockroaches is I ignore them until they fly away. And
that doesn't help at all. But see, these ones fly at our face. They don't fly at your face.
Well, I've seen the King Kong remake, so shoot it with a Tommy gun.
Yeah. I forgot there were, like, giant cockroaches in that movie.
Dude, that's, like, the best scene in that movie.
Yeah, pretty much. But also, it requires watching, like, how many more minutes of King Kong.
Dude, I really love the cut of that movie I have, where I fast-forward through 2 hours of it. But no, actually, fun fact about that scene, the reason that scene's in there is because that was a scene that was cut from the original King Kong. But they fully animated it and everything, and by accounts... when they showed it in the press screenings, people were getting so scared that they were throwing up and running out of the theater. So,
and next door there was a theater with the moving train coming towards the camera.
And, like that's saying. I think that story might be exaggerated because it also slows down the pacing of the movie entirely. Nothing gets gained except, oh, here's some cool monster effects.
Yeah, here's like a set piece that's kind of pointless but cool.
Yeah, so then Marion C. Cooper cut the scene from the movie, and when you cut a scene from the movie back then, you literally put it in an incinerator. And
so in usual Casey fashion, we've went from asking how to kill a cockroach to King Kong.
Yeah, dude, just wait until I tie it into the fact that the Kinks had a song called King Kong.
Kink Kong?
No, it's King Kong, man.
Oh, it should have been King Kong.
I know, I've been saying that for years. But Ray Davies doesn't answer my phone calls anymore.
for 23 years, longer than I've been alive. I've been saying that.
Actually, you're right, because that song was 45 years ago, 22 and 23.
Yeah. Do you have any actual legitimate advice for Kelly?
Get big objects that they can't fly around and drop them.
Like, well, because, like...
Or cardboard... Oh, if you want to torture them for the fact that they're a cockroach and they deserve all the pain in the universe, put them under a box, and then they just have to live in that box for the rest of their life, which would be a couple of days, and they'll starve and go mad.
Will they die that quickly? Because these are cockroaches, so...
Well, they still need sustenance.
But they could just maybe eat dust mites or whatever, dead skin flakes.
Do they eat dead skin flakes?
I don't know, probably. They're probably not picky. They eat garbage. I mean, the thing about cockroaches, is that cockroaches generally come because the environment around them is less than clean, you know? Uh-huh. And I don't want to imply that Kelly's, like, you know, a slob or anything. I'm sure she's not.
In the South, there's a lot more. Like, the JCPenney I work at right now, so many cockroaches in the back.
Yeah.
And what I do is I use the shoes in my store for the best they could ever be used for. I drop them.
Yeah, you're waiting for that shoe to drop.
Oh, that's funnier than it should be.
No, it's just as funny as it should be.
No, I literally sometimes just drop shoes on cockroaches in order to get rid of them.
I wonder if sticky traps would help.
Are we actually giving home ec?
I don't know. It's a question, Casey.
So, if you want to truly get rid of them, the only way to be sure is to take off and nuke them from orbits.
No, that would not kill them.
Oh, God, it wouldn't.
Yeah. Casey, your usual nuke them from orbit solution does not work here. Maybe elsewhere, but not here.
That's how I said to help New Jersey. Or Heathrow Airport.
If we had any New Jersey listeners, they're gone now.
Because I nuked them.
Maybe. So
I was saying, have you been to New Jersey in the last 6 months?
No. Because it's New Jersey.
So you can't prove it is there. And the only way we might know is if Bruce Springsteen was gone. But he might have just been on...
He might just be on tour, yeah.
Exactly.
There's just, like, a giant crater and, like, a new, like, bay area where New Jersey used to be.
It's weird. It's slightly less irradiated than usual.
There's this new tiny gulf over by Pennsylvania, New York. Where'd this come from?
But...
Was there something here? Was there something here before?
I mean, there's a lot of raw materials just lying around in this gulf. You really should be gathering them up. Oh my God, there's dead bodies everywhere.
I mean, here's a floating Atlantic City sign. I mean, I don't...
It's the lost city of Atlantis.
The lost city of Atlantis City. The lost city of Atlantic. No! Oh, so hopefully that answered your question, Kelly.
drop heavy things on them.
Yeah. I don't know. Or get a fly swatter, maybe.
Yeah, but that's a light thing. Those things are... Well, that's the thing about cockroaches. They're more durable than the average bug.
And they're smarter than the average bear.
It's true. But they're dumber than the average Casey. Except for the smart ones. They keep getting away.
They keep, like, juking you and, like... Haha, you thought you had me.
Did you ever play the click hole click venture of spending the night at your best friend's house?
No.
One of the possible alternatives is you go up to the attic to have some fun, and then you find some cockroaches, and if you don't run away immediately, they consume you, and you become a roach queen and have to live out the rest of your life as a cockroach. It's a very weird click venture.
Well, Clickhole's a very weird website sometimes.
Celebrating its 1 year anniversary today.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Greatest website ever.
Besides the Space Jam website.
Well, That's like saying that Citizen Kane is the greatest movie ever just because it's classic.
Whoa. Not just because it's well made, just like the Space Jam website.
Space Jam website's kind of the Birth of a Nation of...
Whoa. Those are some fucking heavy words there. Just because it stars one of the greatest modern athletes who happens to be black, it has to be Birth of a Nation.
No, because it's the oldest website in existence, just like the oldest feature film is Birth of a Nation.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was like the second or third.
No, the first one was Birth of a Nation. I think the second one might be Intolerance, but that might just be...
Which is basically, what's the name of the guy that made those two movies?
D.W. Griffith.
Yeah, it's like him covering his own ass, like, whoa, guys, whoa. See, whoa. I'm not... Like, Intolerance is like, I ain't racist, the movie.
Which, to be fair, Intolerance is pretty awesome.
It is. I mean, they're both really well-made movies. It's just that they haven't aged well in terms of their substance. No,
what I'm saying is... Birth of a Nation has not aged well at all. It was racist essentially 6 months after it came out.
Yeah, and then it's like everyone was calling him racist, and he's like, no, guys, look, here's Intolerance. Wouldn't make a movie about intolerance.
But Intolerance on its own, like, had you not known that, you would probably go, hey, this is long, but it's pretty cool. And I like Intolerance. I am also a fan of people being
against each other. Can we make a movie called Lactose Intolerance?
Can it be 4 hours long?
Yes. It's like real time person digesting milk products.
We got here for a question on how to kill a cockroach.
Hope you enjoyed that, Kelly. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
All right, moving on. From our good friend Fabio.
Hi, Fabio. I watch you while you sleep, Fabio.
Fabio says, when are we going to do the Super Basketball Power Hour / Sports Fiction Hype with Taylor and Fabio? Okay, some context for this one. So, I've been, like, fucking stressed out as shit because my favorite basketball team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, is in the NBA Finals right now. And there's been... What's it?
Good for you.
It's been a fucking roller coaster of a postseason. And I'm so stressed out because, you know, a lot of people might know... I don't know if you know this, Casey, but Cleveland hasn't won a major sports championship in 51 years since 1964.
I'm not surprised.
But there's been plenty of times where they've been close, but they've never gotten it. And
so it's like the Boston Red Sox of...
Well, like, yeah, the Boston Red Sox was probably the biggest one until they won, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then, because that was like, I don't fucking know how long that was. It was super long. It's
1927, I think it was, the last time they won.
Something like that, yeah. And then they won twice in the same decade. And then you have the Patriots, and the Patriots have just won shit, like, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily fairly, but, you know, whatever.
I might be the wrong person to ask about that.
It's just, you know, there was Spygate, which was 2007, I think, which was, like, you know, the coach filming other teams doing shit, which is obviously not fair.
Did I ever tell you about the time I once got myself out playing sports by mistake?
No.
No, I'm not kidding. We were playing kickball, and I think it was eighth grade, and I just put my heart and soul, like, no, I get made fun of in gym class. I am going to put my heart and soul into this kick. And I kicked it, and it went up high to the point where I wasn't sure where it was, and I was running, and it came down on my head.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I totally got myself out because I had no idea where the ball was. It was like Casey at the bat, only with kickball.
Yeah. But so the Cavs are in the postseason. They're playing the best team in, obviously the two best teams, you would think, are playing each other. The best team in the country is the Golden State Warriors. They had a 67 win record in 82 games, so that's pretty good. And you know, for it's been a long up and down thing because we've had a bunch of injuries. Like, two of our best players are injured out for the rest of the season, so they can't play in the finals. You got LeBron James playing, basically surrounded by a bunch of role players, you know, not stars so much as just people who can really do one or two things really well. And so, up until yesterday, they were up in the series 2-1. So LeBron James and these bunch of role players managed to get a 2-1 lead in the 7-game series on the best team in the country. And now it's 2-2. It's tied 2-2. It's basically a best of three right now. So whoever wins two of the next three games wins. That's essentially what it is now. So it's very much a hot, like, you know, it's a roller coaster ride of emotions. As a Cleveland fan, there is a bit of a chip on my shoulder, and because, you know, the national media loves to remind us how much Cleveland's lost, you know, how we're a culture of losers and shit like that. So it makes me a bit, like, you know, not really willing to give any shits about, to put up with anything. But, I mean, me and Fabio had, like, a chat, and he kind of, you know, talked me down from the ledge, and I realized how shitty I was being. So now I'm calmed down a bit. The fact that they were up 2-1 in a series like this against a team that some people are calling, like, the one of the top five NBA teams ever, which I think is really hyperbolic, just in general, because that's one of the things about sports and a lot of things is that we like to do, like, is this one of the greatest, you know, is this player one of the greatest? They do that with LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this, like, basketball's been around for so long and it's changed so much that it's, like, impossible to even compare something. It's kind of like that old debate of, like, who would win in a fight, Batman or Spider-Man? And it's like, who gives a shit? You know? Like, it's never going to happen. Michael Jordan's not going to play LeBron James, you know? Or LeBron James isn't going to play Magic Johnson in the L.A. Lakers from the 80s, the Showtime Lakers, you know? Neither will this Golden State team.
Until we invent time travel.
Until we invent time travel. So, it's just one of those frustrating things, I don't know, and we'll see how it goes. Obviously, the cards are very heavily stacked towards the Cavs, but hey, until they lose four games, you know, I will keep supporting them and hope and thinking that they can win this. So, it's one of those deals, but yeah, I would actually like to really have I don't know if how much Fabio's joking here, but, you know, Fabio knows his shit, so talking to him about sports would be fun.
Yeah, I think you could do that for an episode.
Yeah.
And Lord knows, you're not going to be able to talk sports with any other person on this podcast.
Well, I mean, hey, if you're a listener to this and you want to hear sports talk, listen to Brian Salisbury's Inside the Locker on oneofus.net, so... They just put up a new episode.
Cross promotion.
Yeah, cross promotion, bitches. Look at that. Wham. And if Brian's listening to this, you can have me on to talk about the finals, maybe. If you want a fucking Cleveland perspective. But,
I feel like the Cleveland perspective could be a noir movie.
Probably. It would start with a Randy Newman song.
I'm in Cleveland.
You know there is a song that Randy Newman did about Cleveland, right? It's from Major League. And now, like, knowing how kind of, like, all the parodies of Randy Newman that exist, it's, like, really hard to listen to that song and not laugh. I'm gonna make that the intro song.
Oh.
I'm gonna make that intro song. Well, one, because you haven't heard it yet. Yeah. See, when you listen, you get a little present. Like, here you go. But, yeah, so... I don't know, Fabio. I don't know what we're going to do the Super Basketball Power Hour sports fiction hype.
And honestly,
that's a cool name.
Honestly, if I think that actually wouldn't be a bad idea if you found somebody who wanted to talk sports, just so we can say we did it once.
Oh, so now it's just a status symbol.
Yeah, dude, it's covering your bases. It's like when Hillary Clinton goes down to talk to people in South Carolina. She's not going to win South Carolina. But she still needs to go there and talk to them.
Well, Fabio does do work for one of us, if I'm not mistaken. So,
Yeah.
He should be on Inside the Locker, honestly. I think Fabio could talk about a lot of different stuff. He could talk about, you know, soccer, basketball, football, anything, you know. International sports that we stupid Americans don't give a shit about. I mean, talk about the FIFA stuff that just happened, where the president of FIFA, which is the International Federation of Football, I'd say what the acronym is, but it's in another language.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Federación Internacional de Football.
Football Americana.
No, not Football Americana. That's our football.
I know. I'm making jokes. Dude.
Stop making sports jokes, Casey.
Exactly.
You're out of your element, kid.
It's true. You want to know my entire perspective on everything going on with FIFA? John Oliver.
John, yeah. I need to watch. I've been so behind in last week tonight, and I'm sure it's been fucking awesome, because I remember when the FIFA stuff broke, I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is perfect for last week tonight.
Do you want to know something that they did?
What?
A few weeks ago, when he did a follow-up to FIFA, he said he tried to appease the corporate executives and said, tell you what, Budweiser, if you help bring down the president of FIFA, I will not only drink a Bud Light Lime on air, but I will say it's good and say I enjoyed that Bud Light Lime. Those exact words. Then when that guy stepped down, John Oliver owned up and he drank a Bud Light Lime and he was clearly cringing the entire time.
Well, when you're an English man, then I'm sure it's had some pretty good beers in your day.
Yeah.
Speaking of beer, I had a beer last night that was like an alcoholic root beer,
mm-hmm.
and it tasted just like root beer. It was amazing. Like it was one of those things where it's like you could kind of like a little bit taste the alcohol, like you could taste that it was beer,
mm-hmm.
but it really tasted like a great root beer.
That's why I like, say, Angry Orchard. It tastes like apple juice, but you can still tell that there's enough alcohol
in it. Someone spiked it. It's like you're having spiked fruit punch at a party.
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, have you ever had Fire Orchard, I think it's called, where it's just taking a shot of Fireball whiskey and throwing it into an Angry Orchard?
No, but it sounds like something that you'd call like an Apple Jacks or something.
No, it's Angry Balls.
Angry Balls.
Yeah, but no, I ate ginger at a bar last month that wanted to buy me a shot, and then I said, nah, dude, if you want to buy me something, buy me an Angry Orchard, and we compromised by doing that.
Okay, you just called someone a ginger. Like, are you trying to take away the power of the word?
Dude,
like other derogatory terms.
Dude, he and I bonded over gingerness, and then the fact that my cousin lives in the same town as he, so if I end up there in the summer, he said he'd take me boating.
Well, thank you for treating Casey with kindness, Ron Howard. Thank you. He was in Savannah shooting a movie. is Ron Howard even... does he still have his red hair, or is he, like,
completely...
He's gray. Is he completely gray?
Well, do you remember the Arrested Development season?
Vaguely. I vaguely remember his parts, but I remember...
He was maybe golden brown.
His beard's more ginger than his head,
yeah.
Which doesn't have a lot of hair, to be fair.
And that's why all those Weasley motherfuckers need to do something great, so we have another pure ginger in the entertainment industry.
Speaking of Howards, I love how in the wake of Jurassic World, there's like this whole thing about Bryce Dallas Howard is not Jessica Chastain. And yeah, I never really thought they kind of do look alike.
I think they look like to the same degree that I look like Domhnall Gleeson. Where it's like, okay, it's funny to mention it, but it's not spot on.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, you sometimes look like each other. sometimes look like Domhnall Gleeson.
Oh, there's times, especially when you look at About Time, or was it About Time or In Time? About Time.
No, In Time was the Justin Timberlake movie. They're sequels, they're related, whatever.
In Time is on My Side.
Or in The Land Before Time.
Or in Time After Time. There you go, Nicholas Meyer fans. In About Time, there's points where you look at him, it's like, oh my god, he and I could be twins. And then there's other times, like, in Ex Machina, where it's like, eh, it's not that similar.
Or better yet, like, the Harry Potter movie that he was in.
Oh, he looks nothing like me in that.
Or Frank.
Except that there were two girls who walked into JCPenney one day when I was working there. One of them had a Hogwarts shirt on, and they actually got nervous around me because I looked like Domhnall Gleeson. And they really wanted to tell me I looked like Bill Weasley, but they were too scared to talk. And then I just said, yep, I look like Bill Weasley, I know. And they were like, oh, thank God.
Anyway, I don't know, Fabio, maybe one day. One day. That's my answer. It's a vague answer. Anyway, but thank you for putting some sense into me, Fabio. And thank you for the question. So, moving on, we are going to answer. No, we're gonna ask the questions
now. Now a question for you, Fabio.
Hey, guys.
Now a question for you, Fabio. Why did my wife leave me?
If you're listening to this, honey, please answer my phone calls.
Please, them, Casey. Casey.
The kids miss me. I know it. Come on.
Come on. I stood outside your house. I held up a boombox. I played the Kinks. And then you told me.
I played the all the dialogue from Say Anything.
I wrote the movie Say Anything just for you.
Can you imagine that? Someone should do that. Oh, yeah, yeah. That reminds me of, like, one of my favorite South Park jokes where, like, you know, he in Say Anything, he plays Peter Gabriel. Mm-hmm. But I live in South Park where they do the same thing, but instead of that song, is that In Your Eyes?
Is that I don't remember which Peter Gabriel song. But
in South Park, they play Shock the Monkey by Peter Gabriel. I remember. Shock the Monkey! I always liked Peter Gabriel's more, like, crazy, like, 80s-y-sounding songs, like Shock the Monkey and Sledgehammer.
Peter Gabriel has a lot of range.
Peter Gabriel's pretty fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, dude, he's amazing. I mean, he's no David Bowie, but few things are as sexy as David Bowie. Bowie's the wife I'm trying to get back.
Davey,
come back.
Davey, come back.
You can play with all you.
Okay.
I don't even know whose question we're answering.
Okay, next question. From frequent question asker and friend of show, Ned Coyle.
Okay.
He has got a few. They're all kind of related, and I guess this is kind of more aimed towards me, but you can add to. What would you expect an artist to be paid for drawing a full comic book?
$6.
$6? Say black and white. It really depends on page rates. I wish I had my I have a big book, which is like the commercial artist handbook that talks a lot about pricing and stuff. It all depends on page rates, how much one person does in a thing. I'm not going to give Ned an exact number, but I can give you the $8. I can give you kind of maybe a formula. Define it, because you could do it, like, hourly, like, if it's freelancing, you do your hourly rate, there's paid rates, and the paid rate might go up, depending on how much that one artist does. Now, if it's black and white, obviously there's no color, but if it's split up between, like, two people, say, one's penciling and one's inking and lettering, then, you know, you might have an amount, and then you might split it up between the two of them. Not necessarily 50-50, maybe 60-40. Because that's one of the things that's really interesting to talk about now with comics is, and I'm kind of thinking about it too, because, you know, I have a project going with a friend where if, depending on who picks this up, and if it's a creator-owned book, which is obviously what you kind of want, because you retain the rights and everything, mm-hmm. You kind of have to figure out the percentage that you're going to have. So if it was just me and him, I would probably, and I hope not to sound like I'm greedy or anything, but I would say probably I would want like 60 and he would get 40 just because he's the writer, you know? And the thing to keep in mind about that is that if you're a writer in comics, you could, it's not super hard to necessarily work on multiple things. You know, a lot of people do it. Mark Waid, you know, he does Daredevil. He does a like more indie thing called, The Fox. He's doing a reboot of Archie. Did you know about that? That they're like rebooting Archie?
Well, I know that they killed him off, so I assume that they would be.
Well, but like they're doing it with like some premier talent, and it's fucking awesome. Like some of the art, if you just Google like Archie Comics reboot or whatever, like you're getting Fiona Staples, the artist of Saga, to do Archie. So I'm just saying, like, you know, she does awesome sex scenes and space stuff. She's just, now she's doing Archie. But, you know, like, if my friend wanted to do other stuff, which is totally fine if he wanted to do that, he would probably be more able to. Like, an artist...
And I love how you sounded like a spouse there who's trying to...
Well, but it's kind of like that, in a way. You're a business partner. You're a creative team. And... Really, you know, for an artist, you can't do, like, 3 books a month unless you're fucking crazy. You know, maybe, like, one person out there can, but I can't really throw them off the top of my head. But, you know, most artists I know are doing, like, 1 book, you know, which is a monthly book, which means they have to do 20-plus pages a month, give or take. And, you know, occasionally they might do, like, Comic-Con commissions, you know, which is a great way to make money if you're a struggling artist, is that you can, because you can make some nice coin off of convention commissions. So, I'm not sure what the actual page rate for a lot of people is. It might be a couple hundred a page. Like, we're talking pretty serious cash here, because... Artists gotta eat, so, I mean, if you're paying just 100, you know, bucks a page, and you do 22 of them, that's only, you know, 2,200 a month, give or take, I guess.
Yeah, which is a lot, unless you're, like, trying to have a family and whatnot.
Yeah, which, you know, you would ask for more. You'd probably want 200 a page. Which is like about 4,400 a month, which would, you know, obviously double your income. Plus you got like, but you also have to take in consideration if they're doing covers, so you make more money that way, that kind of stuff. And would it be reasonable to be paid with a percentage of the comic sales instead of upfront?
I think it depends very, very much on what the circulation is. Like, let's say I was an artist and I was doing Batman. I would totally be okay with getting paid in percentage because I know that the percentage is probably going to be a little bit better than actual just a down rates.
But at the same time, that's the exact reason why they don't do that at DC. You know, because they wouldn't be able to like make any money if they paid their artists like a percentage. Man. Like the percentage thing sounds more like commercial illustration or logo design. Because from what I've seen and what I've read and stuff, that's more like you basically like pay the rights or you still own some rights to the logo or the printed illustration or whatever. So you get a cut of whatever print stuff does. I think you do make money through trades. I'm pretty sure.
And, like above the line and below the line can get a little confusing for a lot of things.
Yeah. I would definitely say, like, this might be a cop-out answer, but I would definitely say, you know, research some if you want. And I can refer to you. I wish I knew what the book is. Graphic Design Pricing Guide. I'm trying to think what the book is.
Let's call it the Big Book.
Here we go. It's here for Ned to answer his question. Look up the Graphic Artists Guild Handbook of Pricing and Ethical Guidelines. And I believe it is, I forget what edition it is, but I have the, it's the most recent one. It's the one, if you Google this, if you're listening to this and you Google this, it's the cover is kind of like a dashboard with a steering wheel. It's a big illustration like that. And that's the most current edition. I think it was published in 2013. And that should answer a lot of your questions. I wish I had it handy. My copy's upstairs, but I'm more or less paraphrasing what it will tell you is that, you know, there's page rates and, you know, there's might be some instances where you can do like a percentage. So we'll see. And then finally his last question is, what is the ideal writer-artist relationship in your eyes? So do you have an answer for this, Casey?
My ideal one is both ones know each other's strengths and weaknesses and are able to complement each other really well.
Mm-hmm.
I have that to a different degree because as a screenwriter, I work with directors. And the thing is, with a comic book, how it tends to be is that the writer writes it first and then the artist draws it, but the writer is getting a lot of the story's credit. Whereas with a movie, it's the opposite, where the writer is serving how the director is going to do it.
Yeah.
I get second tier compared to what a writer would be for a comic book.
Yeah, because especially nowadays, because writers are like the rock stars of comic books, which is complete different of how it was back in, you know, the 50s, 60s, and even the 70s a little bit. It was really kind of, you know, the rise of, you know, stuff like Watchmen, and kind of quote-unquote better writing, I guess you could say, or more mature writing, is where writers kind of became more, kind of rose up a bit more in prominence and respect. Plus, you have, you know, the whole 90s, which basically just made all artists look like shit. You know, Rob Liefeld and his peers. Some have survived, obviously, like Mark Silvestri and Jim Lee, but it definitely left a lasting impact in the respect for artists, because it's like, here's dudes that draw, like, utter shit, and then, and yet they're making millions, and starring in Levi's ads, directed by Spike Lee. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yes, Rob Liefeld was in a Levi's ad where he proudly proclaims that he's self-taught and it's directed by Spike Lee. Rob Liefeld?
Like, I'm trying to think of the connection between any of those.
Well, because he loves him some denim. But, yeah, I think my ideal one is, I mean, it's going back to what Casey said about like spouses, it is kind of a marriage in a way where, you know, you work off of each other and you have to kind of respect each other. You have to work as a unit, but also maintain your individuality, where you have to respect each other's ideas. You have to be willing to accept criticism. And this is kind of just a broad, like, as an artist, advice. Like, if you're an artist, obviously accept criticism and take criticism well. But I would say they would be able to maintain their individuality. Like, again, looking at something like Watchmen, like, you can appreciate both the writing of Alan Moore and the art by Dave Gibbons. Like, they kind of stand separately, but then they work great as a whole. You know, you don't want it to be like one's holding the other one up, you know, if that makes any sense. You don't want...
No, it makes all sense. There's some stuff, like, say, you know, All-Star Batman and Robin always stand out to me. It's like, oh, this is actually really good art. I really like looking at this. The trouble is the writing is insane.
And you have to be willing to tell your partner, like, no. I think, like, if they write something or draw something bad, you have to be like, dude, that's not good. We need something better. Mm-hmm. You know, don't ever settle. Which also sounds like relationship advice. Love the one you're with. Love the one you're with. Like that song. So,
well, the thing is, the artist can be the first round of feedback for the writer, where they have to, where they go, what if we did this? And the artist has to go, like, eh, that doesn't necessarily work.
And yeah, like, well, that's something that, you know, I've seen working with people who wrote scripts. It's like, you have to remember, one of the things, and this is for writers, just an advice for writers trying to get into comics, is that don't show too much per panel, you know, because you have to remember that a panel just captures one moment in time most of the time. So you have to kind of pare it down. You're not doing storyboards or animation. You're doing comics. They're a different beast. They're related. You know, they're kind of sister mediums in a way, you know, but it's also very different. So you have to approach it differently when you write it. Same thing, like if you're going from, and you know this from experience, going from screenwriting to comic book writing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely a bit of a difference and a little bit of an adjustment to make. So, yeah, and, I mean, is there anything else you want to add to that?
Don't cheat on them with other artists, but you feel free to, feel free to have an open relationship with other writers.
Polygamous relationship. Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, and, like, you have to respect if they do other things with other people, too. Obviously. I mean, I don't know how big of a problem that is. I don't really think it is in this industry, but, yeah. Hopefully that's had some semblance of an answer to you, Ned. Thank you again for asking some questions, some really good questions that we got some pretty decent mileage out of. Are you ready for the last
one? That's all you are to us, guys. Mileage.
Yes. Yes. We need to suck you dry for minutes.
You are the oil in which we run our diesel cars.
Yes. All right. So thank you for the question, Ned. And moving on to our final one from our good friend Jordan Worth Cobb, Joe Woko.
He is worth far more than Cobb.
Jordan Worth Cobbs. Okay, his question is, what's one independent comic you absolutely must read right now? And he says, also feel like I should ask as a filmmaker, what is your least favorite part of the steps to make a project happen, be it film, comics, music, video directing, or animation? Considering I don't have a crew on me right now, lining the script and storyboarding for my short film right now is tedious as all hell. I know it's the most necessary thing, but right now, when it's just yourself doing it, I'm starting to see Jack Torrance's side a bit right now. Thanks and keep up the great work. So let's start with, which question do you want to do first? Do you want to do the comic one or?
Let's do the comic one. I'll just say it in four letters. Saga.
Oh, yeah, Saga. I think Jordan's reading Saga. If he's not, he should. There you go. Casey's answer.
What's it's like, one? When a friend of mine tells me, oh, I actually haven't seen Jaws yet. And I just go, you're wrong. Fix that.
God, he limits it to one. I forgot that he limited it to one. That's tough. Because there's so many good ones. I might throw out a couple of suggestions just because I'm cheating. And, well, one, I mentioned Tom Rogers earlier, friend of show, Tom Rogers, who was on the first episode with us, and he was talking about his comic that he pencils called Harold, Lovecraft and Tesla, which I think has just hit its fifth issue. So, and you can get it on Comixology. You just search Harold on Comixology, and it should be there. You can get a trade of the first three issues. Very important, and I'm not just talking about it because I have some art featured in issue 5. Meow, meow, meow.
Oh, I didn't know you had art featured.
But if you want to check out issue 5 but not the others, I wouldn't blame you. Meow, 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 meow. No, get all of them. So I would say, Harold, Jordan, this is to you. If you have money, you can throw some cash at Harold. Saga, of course. Some Boom stuff. There's Lumberjanes, which is a really cool series that I've read a little bit of, but I know that it's been getting a lot of acclaim. I think it had a couple Eisner nominations. So that's from Boom. I don't want to mention, like, the license stuff necessarily from Boom, because, you know, those, I wouldn't really consider Adventure Time and Regular Show and Steven Universe Comics as indie, because they're licenses. Mm-hmm. But maybe the, like, more obscure licenses, like Bean Puppy Cat and Bravest Warriors, again, because there's some scat people in those, so definitely worth checking out there. I think if you like Terry Dodson's work, you can check out Big Red, which is a cool... I think Jordan would really like it because it deals with kind of Cold War spy stuff, and it's basically about this, like, super strong, like, I guess she's a superhuman woman who's a Russian spy, and she's basically infiltrating America to find secrets by posing as a superhero, an American superhero. And it's pretty cool. I've only read the first issue, but it's really awesome. And Jordan might know this one too, but Descender, which is written by it's written by Jeff Lemire and drawn by Dustin Nguyen. I read the first couple issues of that. It's really awesome. It has probably some of the best art going on right now by Dustin, because it's all watercolors. It's super awesome. It's all done traditionally, watercolors. It's amazing. Jeff Lemire has done some great stuff, obviously, as a writer. He's another example of a writer that does a ton of projects all at once. And, yeah. So,
cool.
There you go. And there's not a lot of, you know, I don't want to go on, like, this huge thing about, like, read all these books, because I don't want to go off of his one independent, but, you know, there's some there. You know, there's about five or so. So, there you go. Okay. Moving on to a second question. Do you want me to repeat it?
Yes.
What is your least favorite part of the steps to make a project happen? So, what's your favorite part? What's your least favorite part of the project, of making a project? Like phase?
Filming it?
You don't like filming it? Okay.
No, there's a reason I'm a writer. I just don't like film sets.
Is it just too chaotic and stressful?
Chaotic, stressful, and you don't really get the same feeling. Because when I was in high school, I really liked filming something. It was a sense of, oh, things are going... This is it. Things are coming together. And that sense, the moment got depleted for me, doesn't really give any joy. It causes more stress than anything else. It's just not very fun. By comparison, my favorite part of the process isn't when you're writing something. It's when you're done writing something and you're looking at it with someone else and you're like, how can we fix it? How can we fix that? And you're collaborating. Because a good note session isn't a note session, it's an idea session.
Yeah.
And that's always my favorite part of it.
Do you think the film set kind of thing is kind of... It's like a good test to see what kind of person you are, whether you're like an introvert or outrovert kind of thing?
I wouldn't say that. It's a test to see how well you do under immediate stress.
Yeah.
Not like the stress of, okay, that's not working, let's worry about that later. Every single thing that goes on, you can't put it off.
Yeah.
You have to come up with a solution.
Well, because I only ask that just because, like, just thinking about it, and, you know, introverts, they kind of have the energy sucked from them by being around a bunch of people, while extroverts are the, you know, opposite. They kind of glean energy off of people.
Well, the thing is, I know a bunch of introverts who do really great on film sets and they love them, and I know extroverts who really hate them. Do you think I'm an introvert or an extrovert, out of curiosity? Exactly. I don't know.
Well, it all depends. Like, do you like being alone? Do you dislike being in huge groups kind of thing?
I like both.
Mm.
There's points where I get away from a huge group, and then there's points where I just walk around and be the center of everybody's attention.
Well, I guess you're just a fucking weird. Okay, see, I don't know. That's a good thing. Like, I don't know necessarily. What's that?
I'm an enigmavert.
I'm kind of the same way. Like, there are definitely times where I like to just be by myself and just kind of, not meditate, but just kind of, like, refocus and kind of like just kind of relax a bit. But obviously too much of that for me is a bad thing. Like I need to be around people at some point.
Likewise.
You know, it's like, I like to think of myself as kind of an independent person, but at the same time.
Taylor, I assure you are a smart, independent woman.
Thank you. And I don't need no man. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, I don't know if there is an actual, like, oh, man, can you just be both? Can you be sometimes not kind of thing? I don't know. For my answer, I think sometimes writing can be, like, talking specifically about comics, I think that and, like, the thumbnailing process can sometimes be kind of tedious for me. Because growing up and just kind of writing my own comics, obviously I didn't take the time to write scripts and shit. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of did it on the fly. And there are times where I feel like just doing it on the fly makes it a little better for me. Like, sometimes I get too into, like, I worry too much about doing scripts and thumbnails, so I focus too much on them when I need to be looser. Like, just kind of, like, do, like, let's do a quick thumbnail, boom, 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 and it takes, like, you know, 30 seconds to do a thumbnail and figure it out. And sometimes thumbnailing can be fun because it's, like, it's problem-solving. You know, how can I make the best page layout possible with this script page that I'm given? And, you know, we did some exercises like that in SCAD, but sometimes if I'm just doing it by myself, it doesn't feel, like, if I'm working off my own work, then it's, like, it's not as fun. That's why there's a part of me that, like, if I ever have a book that I want to kind of write, I want to have a co-writer, too, to kind of rein me in and help me along.
I accept.
Which, but it's, like, it's kind of like what Mike Mignola does with, like, BPRD, where, and granted, he doesn't do much of the art, let alone art in general anymore, just because he's writing so much, but, yeah, it's like he's gotten a co-writer for a lot of BPRD Hellboy stuff, and I think that's made it better. So yeah, I think you know, for you it's filming, for me it's kind of like, for you it's like the later stages, and for me it's like
it's the middle stage.
Okay, later middle stage
would be editing and coloring and sound and whatnot.
Okay, middle stage, and mine's more early stages stuff. You know, I like the drawing part. I mean, there's not a whole lot of post-production when it comes to comics, except, like, I guess you could consider, it's basically just doing the art is the post-production. Cause you got, you know, the penciling, inking, you got the coloring, you got the lettering and finally putting it all together. So I don't know. It's not a perfect analogy, but yeah, hopefully that answers Jordan's question. And I think that's all of our questions, Casey.
All right. Go home, everybody.
Go home, everybody. Is that our sign-off?
Do we have a new one yet?
Yeah, Chris actually came up with one where it's basically like, you know, thank you. It's, well, I'll save it for the end, but I'll first lead into it where thank you for those that submitted questions. Thank you for being patient with us as we work on some stuff. And, you know, as Chris has said, in the meantime, Casey and I and the rest of us at Geeks at Large will remain at large.
That's stupid.
Okay.